Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Saturday, November 10th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and you guessed it, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, hens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Treats for chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics, non-toxic bug relief, treats, organic snacks, and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Hope you've got good sound. We are broadcasting live on location. Yep, you heard that right. Special Saturday show broadcasting live on location from Cary, North Carolina at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. And, man, it's been a good one. So honored to be here amongst wonderful, wonderful folks, and we're having a great time. It really started yesterday morning at 8 a.m. I had a 3.5-hour workshop on getting started with backyard poultry, and we had a great time with that, and a real intimate setting. Had a good time, learned, answered a lot of questions, and got a lot of people excited about backyard poultry. While that was going on in the room next door, they had a rabbit workshop regarding the keeping of rabbits, which was absolutely wonderful from what I hear. And then they had some afternoon workshops starting at 1 o'clock. I know Pat Foreman, my co-host, she had a conference yesterday as well about really different types of feed for your chickens. Feed does not necessarily have to come from a bag. So that I'm sure was an awesome, awesome workshop from author Pat Foreman, and my co-host will bring on here shortly. And then yesterday we had an absolutely fabulous banquet here at the Embassy Suites here in Cary, North Carolina. There's tons and tons of food, and a lot of food, a lot of the meat was provided by some of the farms that are members of the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. The chicken I know was donated by a local farm. I know the pork was. I know some lamb for the chili was donated. It was absolutely fabulous dinner last night. And we had great speakers last night, a great award. So last night's banquet, kickoff banquet, was really, really awesome. Today we've had some breakout sessions and some workshops on different topics. And then, of course, we're about to have break bread together and have a great lunch here. And with, again, some chicken that has been provided by a local farm as well, also members of the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. So without further ado, of course, you know that Pat's been a co-host of the show for quite some time now, and we occasionally get together for events that we've both been invited to and we both attend, and this happens to be one of them. So let me go ahead and introduce my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, and of course, many of you know her as the Compost Queen herself, but of course it is the lovely the lovely Pat Foreman. Give her a big hand. All right. Hey, Pat, how you doing?
Hey, Whisper, I'm doing great. I mean, my gosh, it has been so much fun here at the ALBC conference. It's my favorite conference to go to every year, and I'm so thrilled that you and Jen and Caleb are all here, too. It sort of brings an extra sparkle to the event. So glad, I know you've been having just an incredibly fun time. So that's goes all day today, and then there's a big get-together tonight, and just life is good. Life is really good. What have you learned so far, Whisper?
Oh, my goodness gracious. I learned a lot
so
about
much, huh?
A lot. Can you hear me, Pat?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay,
am
just
I
wanted to make
up?
Sure. Nope. I just wanted to make sure you hear me. There might have been a little delay, so no problem there. But, yeah, it was awesome. Last night's a guest speaker here, the founder of Seed Savers, we're hoping to have her on here in about 10 minutes or so, just for kind of a short overview of everything that she does. But we're definitely going to schedule her a time to come out and be on the radio show specifically. So, I mean, we can probably fill up a whole hour and a half, 2-hour show with her and what she's all about regarding the seed saving and her her company there, which was fabulous. I really enjoyed that. And, of course, the Marsh Tacky, the horses that Jeanette Behringer has been talking about on the show a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have Jeanette on the show here in a little bit. Surprise, Jeanette. So,
She's just arrived. I saw her walk in the door.
Absolutely. She's got looks like she's getting ready for a PowerPoint presentation for the annual meeting. So we've got that going on after lunch today, start probably around 1 o'clock. So I'm looking forward to that. But it's been fabulous. I've met so many nice people. They're all, mm-hmm. Again, like-minded with, protecting these heritage breeds and the importance of that. It was really inspiring, really, to be with all these folks. We had a great silent auction last night with a lot of great things that benefit the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. I actually was high bidder on a beautiful print. I think it's called Poultry from Around the World, or Chickens Around the World. It was great. I think it was from the United States, out of the archives in Washington, D.C. It was a printed poster.
That's right.
And it had all kinds of great. So I was really lucky to get that. That's definitely going in, get custom framed and go in the house, maybe even in a little broadcast booth. So that I was lucky to get. There were a couple of books I bid on, too, but I didn't get those. They had some really nice old books that were awesome. And I was like, man, this would be really cool to have, all about old books from the 30s and 40s, even back then, that talked about the quality of soil and how to build up the soil and why soil
That's
is important.
Right.
It was really, really super about the – so I was really wishing I was could get on with some of those you know, those books, but that's okay. I will take the poster. For all the folks that listen on a regular basis too, the clucking Christmas songs you hear on this radio show, they had a CD here for that, and I did bid on that, but it went up to a little bit where I was like, I think I'll let somebody else have that, because I've already got a lot of the songs programmed in here to the studio. So I said I'll let somebody enjoy that this holiday season with family and friends. So I let someone else bid on that and win the CD with all those clucking Christmas carols. So, Jen, if we can go ahead and get Eric and bring him over, we'll go ahead and get him interview him so he can enjoy some lunch with his group at his table. And Eric is brand new of the executive director of the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Let me get here in the chat room real quick, and let me get another sound check in the. Before we start doing these interviews and get a sound check from our listeners, if you'll just post in, there's about a 20-second delay, but if you'll just go ahead and post in the chat room a sound check, because I'm now holding the microphone, it's no longer in the okay, sounding fine. That is absolutely, the internet gods are working with us today, so that's always a good thing. So we're being joined by Eric, and I'm sorry because I just met the gentleman this week. I can't. He'll tell us his last name in a minute, Eric, but he is the new executive director for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. Eric, if we'll start off, tell us, of course, your full name, and then I know you're new and you've got a lot of challenges ahead, but I'm going to put you on the spot so you can tell us all about ALBC and what y'all do, why it's important to be a member, what are the honors you get for being a member, and all the great, really all the great things ALBC does, so people have an understanding of why it's important to join and the great works that you do.
Thanks, Andy. It's Eric Hallman, and we love your show at the office, and I know that you have one of our technical folks, Jeanette Behringer, on often, and we always enjoy listening to you. American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, I've been fortunate enough to be with the organization now for 6 months. I realize every day that there's more and more that I need to know, but one thing that is very clear is the importance of the organization and the importance of conserving the genetics of these endangered livestock breeds. Some of the most endangered animals in the world are the livestock breeds that America grew up on. And without our organization, which has been around for 35 years, a lot of those breeds wouldn't be here anymore, and we'd lose a valuable resource that is not only important for the agriculture in the country, but the safety of our food system, for the success of small farms. There's a number of reasons why we need to conserve these genetics.
Could you tell us a little bit about how your group goes about that? In fact, Jen was asking me last night on the way home about ALBC, and she's like, well, how do they actually do that? I know y'all send people all around the country, all around the world. Y'all send feeders out trying to look for particular breeds and try to figure out how many are left. Oh, there's only 300 of these left, or 500. We need to get them. We need to start breeding programs with these, get more people interested in that breed. And I think that's a big portion of that is over the years, for whatever reason, interest in the breeds kind of lost, I don't know if you want to say popularity, and then just kind of fades away. Kind of related as well, and we'll interview here in a few minutes, that I was surprised to learn last night that there was like 4,800 varieties of apple trees that no longer exist. They just don't exist anymore because everybody was planting the others, or they went the hybrids, or these different other types of apple trees. So tell us, again, kind of in a brief way, how y'all go about doing that and saving these breeds that y'all find that may be on their way to extinct?
Thanks, Andy. Well, you're pushing the limits of my knowledge 6 months into the job, but let me see if I can give a valid answer to those. We're, first of all, a science-based organization, so the decisions we make and the breeds we look to conserve are based on census numbers. We keep a conservation priority list that tracks the number of those breeding animals around, and we try to take that a little bit further and look at the structure of the breed, the characteristics, who's got the breeds, how interrelated they are, how endangered they are, and try to educate people on the breed, on good breed management. We do some rescue. That's the exciting part. We can discover an animal, that a breed that we thought has disappeared. You know, that's the exciting part. I think the challenges we face is when can we declare a success? And it's not something that happens overnight. It happens over time. And we need to do a better job of getting the word out that we have had amazing successes with a number of different breeds, but it doesn't happen overnight, and it takes a lot of work from staff and from these dedicated breeders that are out there trying to save this resource.
One of the things I was talking to you about yesterday regarding membership, I believe it's $35 for an annual membership with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and we were talking about sitting down yesterday. We had some time together and talking about as a member and as a new member, because I had told you I had a hard time. Of course, I know having Jeanette come on for the last couple of years, the third Tuesday of every month, and sharing all the great works that y'all were doing, you know, I felt compelled and saw the great works and wanted to join. But I had a hard time myself, you know, telling folks, hey, join. It's a great membership with me not joining. So, you know, I wanted to join, saw the great works. Now I can encourage everybody else to join. But I can tell you honestly that after yesterday and last night's banquet, it was so inspiring and so uplifting. I just can't wait to get back here tomorrow, I mean next year, and then and meet all these great like-minded people. So tell the folks. Maybe again the soccer mom that's got, you know, 12 chickens in the backyard, has a nice coop, and they're doing, you know, they want to do all the right things. They're interested in the breeds that they picked with their children. They're loving these fresh eggs that they're getting out of their backyard. But of course, we want to reach out to them. So tell them how you know, even the urban chicken keeper, how the ALBC can benefit them, and all the great benefits of being a member.
There are a lot of great benefits to being a member. Thank you for asking. You're exactly right. Well, most of our dedicated members, 43% of them have endangered breeds. Others have a connection to the endangered breeds. But the people we'd really like to reach out to are like you say, maybe the urban family that cares about where their food comes from, wants to know their farmer, people that are into food and are interested in exploring the value of these heritage breeds as a very different food source with great taste. There's just a bunch of folks that I think could benefit from this knowledge and would have interest in it. We just need to do a better job of getting the message out, talking about our successes and why it's important. If you care about the food supply, if you care about the food you eat, if you care about the future of agriculture, if you hear about your history, one of the great story, if I could go on, was we had a chicken tasting, and the older people that were tasting these heritage birds were going, that's my grandmother's chicken and dumplings. I finally can taste that taste. I remember so well. And others are remembering other tastes from their childhood by tasting these heritage chickens that they haven't had available. What was sad was the young people were tasting the packaged grocery store chicken and going, well, that's the chicken I remember. They had no sense of that heritage, no connection to the past. And that's something that has struck me recently about finding that connection to the past, whether it's through taste or whether it's being out on the farm, that we're losing. And people are recognizing that's important to them. And we're seeing that with lots and lots of young people coming back to the farm. And we want to help in any way we can. Our website has tons of information. If you're considering chickens, we call chickens the gateway animal to others. So if you're considering any backyard poultry or rabbits or goats, come to our website. We have a host of information. Call the office. We can find breeders for you, find sources of birds for you. And we just want more people to know about this.
Yeah, and I know that I was surprised as a first time member over the last year that how many publications I get throughout the year, keeping me informed about what's going on at the ALBC and then the annual breeder's manual. So if I'm interested, I can research about the breed, and then knowing that I can contact through you guys, because you keep a very good list of these expert breeders for these heritage breeds, that I could then contact and say, hey, I'm looking at wanting to keep this rare breed of chicken, and then you can get it right from the breeder themselves through the ALBC.
And that's correct. And remember, these are rare breeds, so sometimes they're not available around the corner, but we can connect you with breeders that have stock available. We can give you information on the best husbandry practices. One of the things that we're trying to do is capture the knowledge from what we call master breeders, these experts that have been doing this for years and years. And before they leave us, we want to capture that knowledge and pass it on to the next generation. And as far as we know, we're the only ones focused on doing that. And all that information is available. We'll be happy to provide it to people. And just contact us. Become a member, $35. You get, like Andy said, you get a lot of information for that, and you help a great cause.
Absolutely. Eric, thank you very much for all that you do. I know you have a big challenge at you and with the position with the ALBC, but we know you're very capable. Otherwise, they wouldn't have picked you out from a list from all over the country of great folks to head the ALBC. So thank you for a great conference. Thank you for interviewing today, and I'm sure that we'll be able to work together in the future as a team. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andy, and thank you for having us on the show. And again, we love the show. Good luck to the Chicken Whisperer.
Okay. Thank you very much. All righty, that was Eric Hallman, and he is, over the last 6 months, he is now the new executive director for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. So definitely looking forward to working with him in the future. Pat, are you still with us out there? I know you're wandering around the ballroom. Pat, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here, absolutely. Thank you for checking in. It is a wonderful event. And the thing is, the future of the ALBC, I mean, it needs a lot of support, because every year it's always a little bit of a struggle to get the budget, and there's always more programs and more needs and requests for doing this breed recovery than there's really money in the pool for. So by joining, I would highly recommend it. It not only helps gets individuals and breeders incredibly valuable information, but it also helps support these other efforts that will preserve these genetic pools for generations to come. And it was really sad. I've had several conversations where the numbers of certain pigs, hog, swines have just gotten too low, where they're not recoverable. So we've lost them. And that's happened to chickens. It's happened to cows. So it's really helped preserve the future by joining ALBC now or donating. They also can use a tax-deductible dollar-for-dollar off the bottom line donations.
Absolutely. So. Yep, they're a nonprofit organization. And Pat, I know you've been involved with them a long, long time. I'm kind of a newbie, mm-hmm. even though Jeanette's been coming on for the last couple of years. So I know you are highly respected with the group and all these folks in here that love to see you when you walk in. So Pat's been involved with ALBC for years and years and years. And you even have some Chanticleers as well. I know that's that I think they talk a lot about with the ALBC. So I'm going to put you back on mute, Matt, Pat, for just a moment as you walk around the ballroom and talk to folks and meet and greet. And we're going to go ahead and get started with our next interview. And I'm going to let her introduce herself. She sat at our round table last night, and so I've met her officially one time. And so, again, unfortunately, her name escapes me. But I can tell you that she is the founder of the Seed Savers organization. She's going to tell us all about that. It was amazing. I was just almost in a trance listening to her last night tell this story about great-grandparents and then grandparents and how it really all started with a little pillbox full of seeds to now where it's just a huge, huge, really an operation, still family-run, but the growth of seed saving and how important it is. You heard me talk with Eric regarding the animals in ALBC, but yesterday she talked about, for example, apple trees, and there were 4,800 different varieties of apple trees that just no longer exist. They're just not, you can't find them. They're gone forever. and which is really a sad thing. And these may have been just wonderful. So she organic seeds, the heirloom varieties, the heirloom tomatoes, and the squash, and heirloom corn, and all these wonderful things that our grandparents and great grandparents had that you just can't find now. It's just this is a lot of this. Hybrid or Franken food that we've got now, that some people call it. But this is wonderful stuff. She's got an incredible catalog I was looking at last night, which I intend on 100% ordering from as we plant our 1 acre organic garden at the homestead. So I'm going to go ahead and have you introduce yourself. And then again, because we want you to get to lunch, tell us, not quite in depth as you did last night, because that was awesome, but just kind of overview about Seed Savers, a little kind of how it got started, and then about today's Seed Savers, about what y'all offer to all the folks out there that are interested in preserving these heirloom flowers and plants and our heirloom food, which is also many things that you have are certified organic. So, and tell us your name too, because I'm a bad host. But hey, we've only met one time, so I'll let you go ahead.
Thank you, Andy. I have an advantage because you have your name tag on. So it's all connected. You cannot disconnect the two. So it was my pleasure to be here to tell this group a little bit about the work that we're doing. I really feel like we're sister organizations. But back to Seed Savers Exchange, our focus is, like I mentioned, is the heirloom varieties of fruits, vegetables, flowers, and herbs. It started with a little pill box. You were right about that. It was a seed given to me by my grandfather, and at that time he mentioned the seed came into this country with his parents when they immigrated. I had never known that story, and just holding that box of seed in my hand was like a living link back to relatives that I never thought about and knew, and now I was connected with them. Unfortunately, my grandfather passed away shortly after he gave us the seeds, and Kent Whaley and I thought at that time how often that might happen. When immigrants came into this country, they brought with them the best seeds that they wanted to grow here because they didn't know what they'd find here. So they brought with them tomatoes and peppers, and my ancestors brought morning glory seeds and tomato seeds.
And didn't you say there were even some folks that brought soil?
There were. People came in. They respected their gardens back, and this was from Poland, actually. A younger gentleman came up to me, and he said, my great-grandparents brought bags of soil over because they didn't know what they'd find. And I thought that was so telling, that gardens was their life, and it was for my grandparents as well. So people brought into this country precious things. And soil and seeds and maybe antiques from the homeland. But anyway, affecting the things that created all the food that we might need for the future. Plus, they're beautiful. Heirloom varieties are beautiful.
Absolutely. So not only bringing their lives over here, their human lives, but they brought life of the living dirt and these plants and these seeds, again, not knowing what they were going to find. And plus, I think, to bring a little bit of home with them as well, to give them some reminders when they plant those plants and they come up, and reminding them from the homeland as well. So now you're in Iowa, and last night you talked a little bit about, you know, you being surrounded with fields and fields and fields of GMO corn, and how you've got almost 1,000 acres now, and you've got areas of that land that are in kind of valleys and in low-lying areas to try to preserve, for example, some of this corn, because it is through the air, pollinated through the air. And so you've got areas that you feel are pretty safe for your varieties, and you test them ever so often to check and see if they've been cross-pollinated, if they're still pure, and I think you do that quite often. And then tell us a little bit about how y'all, in those gardens you described last night, how you try to keep those 100% pure, being surrounded by a lot of GMO crops.
We do have a problem with corn in Iowa, because most of Iowa is a cornfield. But we do take we take precautions for all the seed that we're growing out from our seed bank. We have 24,000 accessions of seed. That seed we check every 10 years. We put it in the seed bank. If it needs to be regenerated, that is protect our varieties. So we have isolation gardens. And I always want to tell folks that seed saving is not as difficult as you might think, because when you think about all the food we have here, the plants, our ancestors were seed savers. And that was a skill that has not been passed down with the seeds in many cases. So we're all about passing the seed saving skill, the stories along, and the culture along with the seeds. Every seed has a story. But back to just keeping the seed genetically pure, you do have to be careful about that, because we want to store this seed. We want it to be in its pure form. But for instance, tomatoes and lettuce and beans are self-pollinating. So those are varieties that you could do in your backyard if it's open pollinated and save the seed from year to year. And you start your own tradition, and it's very economical as well if you can start saving seed. But anyway, you do have to know how the seeds cross to determine how you plant them.
And then we'll wrap it up briefly, because I know we're going to invite you on the radio show for a nice long interview at a little later date. But tell us a little bit about, because I knew about the seed vault up in Norway, but y'all have kind of a triple seed vault. You've got, of course, the seed vault there at your business. Apparently there's another one. And then, of course, y'all have seeds in the underground seed vault in Norway preserving these heirloom seeds.
Right. To be true stewards of this collection that we've been entrusted with, it's not prudent to store all your eggs in one basket. I'm sure that's a familiar. Everybody in this room would understand that. But so we have it protected, because if there's a disaster that would happen with the weather, which who knows what can with the weather changing these days, our seed is protected. If there was a fire or something at Seed Savers, we'd have a backup collection in Fort Collins and also in the seed storage vault in Norway. But I say so often, we can be the gene bank, we can be the seed bank, but we need people to grow these seeds to keep them alive.
That's super. Thank you so much. I'll let you get back to lunch, and I'll contact you for a more official interview a little later. Thank you. Hey, Pat, also, this is a great segue to one of your things that you're doing up in your hometown, and that is kind of a seed library where you can go in kind of like a book exchange. You can go in, leave some seeds, take some seeds, and then when those grow, then you can take back more seeds that you borrowed and take more than that you borrowed. So tell us a little bit about how the seed library works in your area, Pat.
Well, it's happening all across the country, Whisper, where seed libraries are popping up, usually in collaboration with the public library, and there's a whole bunch of information on how to do that on the internet. And the reason that's really important is so that you've got seeds that are naturalized and specific to your climate zone or to your niche climate. And that's, whether it's really dry or hot or in the mountains. And in some places like the Shenandoah Valley, we've got high altitudes as high as 2,700 feet. And then I think it's so important to preserve them again for the future, as well as to have the nutrition that comes through the heirloom seeds that is not really available in the commercial hybrids, because they were selected for a lot of different criteria, but one of the selection was not nutrition. So that's the seed library. Thanks for asking about that, Andy.
Oh, absolutely, no problem. And because I think that's really neat, to be able to say, I've got these, because I know for a fact I probably have. Seeds are tiny. When I say I have thousands of seeds, I probably have well over probably 2,000. I know turnip seeds right now, and some others that I just didn't get planted or didn't plant. So I'm gonna really look into that. Even in the big agricultural mecca area that I'm at down there with these big farms, and maybe start something in our local library about that. Pat, hey, that's awesome information. We're gonna go to commercial break. When we come back, I've got a representative here from Certified Humane. Again, let me make that clear, because I always do when we have them on. It's not the Humane Society. No, this is an organization, Certified Humane. Many of you are already familiar with their logo on meat packaging and on egg packaging at the store. When you go in to look for eggs and you look for meat and you look for chicken and beef and you see their logo, Certified Humane, then you know that package you're getting has to abide by certain stringent requirements regarding no cages and so much space and diet and things like that. So when you go to the store and you're not really sure, okay, this says free range, live today from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference in Cary, North Carolina. We are here at the Embassy Suites. We're having a big lunch banquet right now, and we'll return right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, technology you can trust. No matter how much we pamper our chickens, no matter how often we clean our coops, there is always that chance they will get mites and lice. If they do, you want to treat them as naturally as possible. Poultry Protector from Carefree Enzymes uses all-natural enzymes to eliminate the mites and lice from your coop, nesting boxes, and chickens with no egg withdrawal period. My chickens don't always have mites and lice.
Freeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisper. Again, we are broadcasting live on location from Cary, North Carolina at the Embassy Suites in the ballroom. We're all having a wonderful lunch, and we are broadcasting live at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy annual conference poultry expo in Atlanta. And so I know that a lot of folks, someone in the chat room said they had not heard about it either or seen their logo. So she's going to tell us what that is all about. So when you go to the grocery store and you want to buy food that you know, you don't have to worry about, well, it says this or it says that, but how do I really know it's true? These are companies that are out there that join Certified Humane in their organization, and by doing so, to be able to put that logo on their food labeling, whether it be chicken or eggs, and there's probably some other products, maybe beef, you're going to know because you can go to their website and you can see what exactly the guidelines that this food company, this animal company, has to abide by in order to use their logo on their product to give you that peace of mind that you're eating some food that was certified humane, and you'll know what that means by checking it out. So if you'll introduce us to you, your name, and then tell us all about Certified Humane so we know what to look for when we go to the grocery store.
Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Sequoia Ireland. I am the certification program coordinator at Certified Humane by the Humane Farm Animal Care Program. So pretty much we are an animal welfare certification program, which it's a voluntary program for producers to come on and agree to raise their animals according to our standards. And if you go to our website, certifiedhumane.org, we have all the applications, we have all of the standards for all of the different species available for you all to view on our website. And so you're talking about things such as free access to feed and water, no antibiotics in the animal's feed unless it's for therapeutic use, because we understand that, you know, some animals do get sick and they need to be treated accordingly. Space requirements for different species and stuff like that. But again, all of that is available on our website.
Exactly. What are some of the – I mentioned eggs, and I think chicken and beef. Is that the three main? What are some other products in the stores that they might actually see your logo on?
Okay, yeah, sure. So laying hens, chickens, pork products. We also have goat yogurt on our program. So you can actually go on our website to the Where to Buy page. You type in your zip code or your city, state, and a list of stores in your area that carry certified humane products will come up.
That's great. So that's the information right there, folks. You've got certifiedhumane.org, okay, right? Certifiedhumane.org. You can go to that website. Not only can you see exactly the guidelines that these food companies out there have to abide by in order to have their logo on their product. In some cases, it means free range. Would say they have the birds have access to outside, like we were talking about yesterday. And that outside may be a concrete pad enclosed in a fence. Off the big main barn or the house that the chickens are housed in and with a tiny little door that may not even encourage them to go outside. And so if that chicken happens to go outside for 5 minutes in its entire life, it could be considered, I guess, free range. So definitely look at those definitions yourself, but that gives you an idea how labeling, just like a lot of chicken meat you'll see in the store may say pork will say raised without hormones. But it's federally illegal to use hormones. So you think you're getting some awesome piece of meat that is just, wow, this is awesome, and this company is great because they have a label on their package that says raised without hormones, but they're not allowed to begin with. So how they're using that as an advertising gimmick, if you will, to get you to buy their meat when they can't use it even if they wanted to. So they're advertising something. It's just kind of a crazy how labeling has gone wild out there with our food. And I know that I think it was Proposition, was it 37 out in California, that failed because we understand that Monsanto pumped millions of dollars to fight that. It's amazing what things you have labeled that tells you the ingredients, but yet there's no they're not by law to tell us that the food we're eating is, for example, GMO or anything like that. It's kind of crazy if you ask me, but like I said, I didn't even know about it 2 years ago, and since then I have, and I still run into people because y'all don't really do any advertising like on TV. Y'all get write-ups in magazines and newspapers like, hey, check these folks out, or here's a news article, or let's talk about this company. But no real advertising that really the average Joe out there would see kind of sitting in their house, going to work, maybe reading a magazine occasionally here or there, a newspaper. And we know how with the Internet that's becoming less and less. So I always like to spread the word about what you're doing. But look for that at the stores, folks, because a lot of times at the meat counter they'll have a big 8 by 8 inch by 11 inch kind of laminated label that says certified humane, and you can recognize that. So go to their website, certifiedhumane.org, and it'll help you, I guarantee you, when you go shopping, so you can make right choices for your family. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. I think we're going to be ready for Jeanette Barringer when she's ready to come over, and that's we're going to wrap up at 1 o'clock because we have the annual meeting coming up here after lunch here at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And so we are glad you're tuning in. Of course, you can always listen to the archive at iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and several others that carry the radio show. So I interrupted her lunch, but I think it's worth it for all of you. So we've got Jeanette Barringer. First time we've met yesterday face-to-face. She's been coming on the radio show for a couple of years now, and she is on, I think, the technical side. Well, you can tell us your position and what you do, but and then I want you to tell us a little bit about that awesome workshop yesterday. right after lunch, you tell us about that off that little workshop. So some of the with the Marsh Tacky breed of horse, and that was great. And I had a chance to talk to him briefly yesterday, which was fabulous. So now tell us a little your position, kind of what you do with ALBC, because she does come on the show once a month, and then you can tell us about that great workshop. So if you come next year, some of the workshops you might be able to attend, not a lot in detail, but you can just kind of tell us what it was all about, and then because it's great, you know, and then we'll wrap the show at 1 so we can get on with the annual meeting.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back, and doggone it, I was hoping you weren't going to mention the workshop. It was actually an awesome workshop, but I'm the research and technical programs manager and the primary field person for ALBC, so I am out and about meeting producers and helping farmers to understand how to manage their animals and become better breeders. and I do field research such as, I was looking at goats on the side of a cliff face in British Columbia a few months ago, being invited by the Park Service to evaluate these goats that they think have been out there since the 1800s. And what we saw we liked. There's still some more investigation that needs to get on. But, you know, we really had an amazing experience going out there looking. And the workshop that Andy's alluded to was a swine semen collection workshop, which was pretty amazing if you're into swine, and was put on with Dr. Flowers and Dr. Tim Safransky to be able to get her done. With a lot of the pig breeds, it's increasingly becoming very important to try and save what we can now because we're losing so many bloodlines so quickly, and AI may be the way to go. And
that's awesome. So I know every year y'all have kind of like a workshop like that, a hands-on, which is fabulous. And so, like I said, I talked to several people yesterday that attended it, and they had nothing but awesome things to say. They were amazed. They were like, you know, every participant had their own pig, and they got it was just, it's amazing the comments I got about that. And so really, you know, you're going out, you're in the field, you're the ones, no pun intended, getting your hands dirty. You know, really, you know, whether it be this, that, or the other. So that's, you know, that's awesome, because then you get to see a lot of things that the folks in the office may not see, that all that knowledge, the experience, meeting the folks, and then being able to come back once a month on the radio show and sharing that. So tell us some of the things, and then we'll wrap it up, some of the things you're really active in as we speak. Maybe certain breeds, whether it's chickens, pigs, goats, horses, that are really, that you're really active with and pursuing and or doing projects with right now.
Well, the major initiatives that we're working on currently are, have to be like the Java Recovery Project, and we're going into our second year with that, and the swine initiative. As I mentioned to earlier, some of the swine breeds are in really big trouble. Feed conversion is an issue with swine. They're not the greatest for feed conversion hogs and making long-term commitments with them, and it's a challenge, but if you're in the right place with the right niche market, you can do quite well with them, but it takes time, and you got to build up your stock and build up quality within that stock.
So for the novice that's never owned a hog in his life that now has a little homestead and may consider it, my small scale probably wouldn't benefit anything you're doing, but I'm going to ask this really novice question. So with what you're talking about, it sounds like it's a lot more difficult than just throwing some leftover this out there, some leftover that, as far as, you know, feeding these hogs, making sure they have the right nutrition. It's more than just, I've got some leftovers from the table, I'll take it out to the hogs. It's a lot more involved than just that, like we may see on a farm show on TV or one of the, like you're going to believe anything you see on TV. But, you know, from a lot of people's perspective, I can take this over to the hog pen and maybe some rotten apples, this, that, or the other. It's obviously more involved than just that, it sounds like, that if you're going to truly have. And of course, you're talking about maybe bigger
graining them, so they're going to like the local cannery to get like the fruit and vegetables that hit the ground from the truck at the cannery that's not fit for human consumption anymore. So you can get that. You could go to like a local grist mill and maybe get some leavings from that production. Or, you know, my buddy has a friend who's got a huge oak trees, and he goes and collects, you know, truckloads of acorns and so forth and so on. And so he's putting a lot of effort into adding to the food items that he's feeding his pigs beyond the grain. And that's how he's able to stay profitable. You know, you got to really think as an entrepreneur. But, you know, if people just want to have a small herd, that's okay too. Just think about not getting the rarest of the rare if you're just raising pigs for yourself, because we really need numbers of those animals on the ground to effectively conserve them.
And I'm going to ask this. I think I know the answer, but even with pork, you know, who doesn't like bacon? But I was saying, and I guess along with these heritage breed hogs as well, just like heritage breed chicken or chickens that's raised on pasture, that's the flavor difference would just be absolutely overwhelming based on these hogs, based on the way they're raised when you actually process them and eat them versus something you might get prepackaged at the store.
Absolutely. It's like night and day, and the flavor would just blow you away. We had mule foot last night, mule foot barbecue, and people were still clapping for it today, 24 hours later.
Absolutely. Hey, we're getting started with the ants. Sneak into one of those as well and learn more about possibly a topic that might interest me and Jen on our homestead. So, again, thank you very, very much for tuning in today. This is a special Saturday episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, broadcasting live again from Cary, North Carolina, at the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. And I see my lunch waiting for me over here at the table. They're introducing, let's see, that was one of the chairman of the board there, and introducing some folks here for the annual meeting. So, again, tune in Monday. We will be here this coming Monday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. In fact, Peter joins us every single Monday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And if you're a first-time listener, we thank you for joining in. We appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. I know there's lots of people that can listen on Saturday that can't listen in, to the week, but the radio show has a reach of thousands and thousands of people, and we thank you very much for listening and supporting this radio show and supporting our sponsors. But next week, let me look at the calendar here and give you kind of a rundown. Looks like Monday the 12th, we've got Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Tuesday the 13th, you know what, actually it's supposed to be Jeanette Behringer, but I think after this conference she'll be a little too busy to maybe join us on Tuesday. Wednesday, let's see, that's the second Wednesday, which is a small business Wednesday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thursday, we've got poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, and then Fun Friday on Friday to give you an idea of Stock Breeds Conservancy annual conference here in Cary, North Carolina. Thank you very much. Pat, let me bring Pat back on. I told you, I promised. Pat, thank you very much for joining us. And you may want to sound on with something that we were talking about earlier. I had a little background noise when we had brought you live. I don't know if it was just with your mic, it was breathing or a little or what have you. But no, thank you very much for joining us. And tell us, Pat, real quick, I want you to tell us, as I wanted to do this, we've started the meeting here. If you have a second to tell us about, because I know I mentioned to you yesterday.
Nonprofit, 501c3, and the chickensandyou.com is the host website for the training series that leads to the Master Backyard Chicken Keeper certification. So if you just go to chickensandyou.com, we've got over 20 courses that are outlined there, and it's all listed. So, Whisper, there's a little sound coming in on the radio. Shall I just take us on out?
I think you're fine. They were clapping at something.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, they were clapping about something. So
okay.
No problem. So wonderful.
Great. I'll come down and get my lunch too. So can I go? I'll go ahead and just sign off if that's all right.
Please do.
Our special guests today were Eric Hallman. He is the executive director of the American Livestock Breed Conservancy. Diana Ott Wheatley is the founder of Seed Savers Exchange. It's become an international Seed Savers Exchange, and it's quite a tribute to the power of just one or two people and how their dream can grow. Sequoia Ireland is the certification program coordination for the Pat Forman, and from all of us, absolutely all of us, quote the chicken, may the flock be with you evermore. Blessings, everybody. Ha 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 ha